Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Well, a special meeting of EU leaders will take place in Brussels today to discuss defence spending in light of the deepening crisis in Ukraine. Donald Trump's decision to cut military aid and now intelligence sharing with Ukraine has left Europe scrambling to come up with a response to the threat of Russian expansionism. Here at home, the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio has told the government that addressing the trade deficit with Ireland is a priority for the Trump administration. That's according to a report in today's Irish Times. Well, I'm joined first by Rosie Burchard, who is Europe correspondent with DW News. And in a moment, we'll speak to Pat Leahy, political editor with the Irish Times. But Rosie, first to you, and Ursula von der Leyen's Rearm Europe plan. That is expected to be central to this meeting that's happening today in Brussels. What's in the plan? How is it expected to work?
So I think the big question of this summit is really whether Europe is going to show it's really serious about its own defence in the face of all these rapid shifts we've seen coming out of the Trump administration. This plan, according to EU officials, could amount to a total increase in defence spending over a few years of around 800 billion euros across the EU. But those figures are in some way kind of hypothetical. Let me break it down for you a bit. Part of the plan includes the European Commission using its financial heft to go to the markets and borrow up to 150 billion euros, which EU member states can then take on in loans for their own joint procurement of defence needs. Then there is a plan to ease fiscal rules for defence spending, so to allow member states to go into more debt if it's for defence reasons. There's a cap on that of about 1.5% of GDP. And beyond that, there's plans to drum up private capital and to dig into some EU budget pots for some defence-related spending. EU budget money cannot be used to actually buy weapons. So that would be more things like research and innovation. And it's not any sort of a mandate from the European Commission to EU member states to spend more, because that is in the hands of national governments. The EU Commission doesn't have that power. Mm.
When it comes to that EU Commission money going to the market to borrow 150 billion, there have been calls from some member states not to loan that money to the individual members, but to give it as a grant. And I'm sure there'll be a bit of push and pull on that today.
There will definitely. We've heard that loud and clear, for example, from the likes of Poland. This whole plan is kind of based on what we saw during the COVID-19 pandemic, and some of that money did come in the form of grants. When I spoke to EU officials about this, they said they tried to choose the model which is likely to receive the swiftest backing, because there really is a sense here. I mean, how long have we been talking about a wake-up call in Europe, really, for the past 3 years since the full-scale invasion of Ukraine? But let me tell you, the last few weeks of the Trump administration have been a real wake-up call. That's when those words have started to take on a different meaning to when it comes to diplomats and sources I'm speaking to here in Brussels. Mm. Now they're scared and they're trying to act.
And Rosie, they don't have the luxury of time here. I mean, this decision by the United States to cease military aid, it means that Ukraine will be in real trouble in just a couple of weeks.
They don't have time on their side here. And in terms of supporting Ukraine, that's also on EU leaders' agenda. That always tends to be much more controversial, doesn't it? Because there's not a consensus within the EU on that. Particularly Hungary and Slovakia are likely to try and block some agreement among EU leaders on rapidly boosting support to Ukraine. So what we might see is countries deciding to kind of go it alone, or go it in more kind of coalitions of the willing, to try and rapidly boost that support to Ukraine when it comes to military aid and other types of aid, and say, look, maybe the EU is not the format for this when the need is so immediate. It should be noted that while Europe in general has given a lot of military aid to Ukraine and financial support, almost around about the same as the US, or even more depending on the numbers you look at, it's not just a question of money. If European nations want to replace US aid, there's all sorts of complications with that, because they rely on US technology, they rely on US permissions to use weapons. And that's why I think you'll see EU leaders still trying to reach out to the Trump administration and get them more on the same page. Whether that will work at all, well, that remains to be seen.
Particularly particularly when it comes to a credible security guarantee, and that would mean boots on the ground. Now, in the last few minutes, we have had Sergei Lavrov of Russia saying that they would consider deployment of such forces as NATO presence in Ukraine. He went on to say, we cannot allow this to happen. Now, in the same media press conference, he said that he believes, and Dmitry Peskov saying this as well this morning, they believe that Macron's speech, Emmanuel Macron, the French president's speech last night, showed that he wants to continue the war. So I suppose it just gives you a sense of how difficult it will be to reach a ceasefire, even if the Trump administration decides to come on board with security guarantees.
Absolutely. And what we know so far is that the UK and France are championing an idea, according to Macron at least, who's been briefing press, of starting with an initial truce in fighting in Ukraine. So when it comes to attacks from the air, some attacks on energy infrastructure, and then if that holds and negotiations are possible, to move into a bigger ceasefire. But all that is so riddled with doubt, given the messages coming out of Russia. And of course, the Kremlin has been delighted with the US administration's sort of go-it-alone approach so far. Now, on that point, just quickly to say on the Kremlin saying that this would be a deployment of NATO forces, there's a reason that you've seen individual countries saying they would be willing or not to send peacekeepers. And that's because the US has said very clearly this should not be a NATO force. And this would be, if the plan that is currently kind of on the table would go ahead, it would be some countries, including France and Britain, sending some peacekeepers to do some work to hold up a down-the-line deal, which, of course, as so far, does not exist. They want to try and secure some US backing for that plan and US assistance to their potential boots on the ground. It's all hypothetical for now because, as we know, Russia is very much still waging war as we speak.
Rosie, thank you very much for being with us. Rosie Burchard there, Europe correspondent with DW News. Pat Leahy is with us too, political editor with the Irish Times. Good morning, Pat.
Morning, Claire.
So we did hear during the week that the Taoiseach Simon Harris had a chat with the Secretary of State, the US Secretary of State Marco Rubio. We were told that conversation went on longer than expected, that it was constructive. But you have more on it because you're writing this morning that a little more was said and perhaps some unwelcome mention of Ireland's trade surplus with the United States.
Yeah, this seems to be a series of calls that Marco Rubio is having with European leaders. And he spoke by phone on Tuesday with Simon Harris. Now, Irish officials supplied a readout of that call. They said, you know, that they agreed on the mutually beneficial nature of the dynamic US-Ireland relationship today, Ireland's sixth largest investor in the United States, et cetera, et cetera. And you know, that was fine insofar as it went. They also said, as you pointed out in your introduction, that the call had gone on longer than expected. Though when I asked them, they didn't say how long they had expected the call to last and how long it did last. But anyway, leave that aside. The State Department yesterday supplied its own readout of the call. And one of the first things that they noted was they said that the two men discussed the US priority to address the US-Ireland trade imbalance. And that was obviously missing from the Irish readouts of the call. Now, when I asked government spokespeople about this, they said that, you know, this was essentially mentioned in passing. It wasn't a major point of the discussions in the call, but I thought it was interesting that it was one of the first things mentioned in the US readout. And I think that has kind of prompted fears amongst some Irish officials that this will very much be on the agenda when Micheál Martin, of course, goes to speak to Donald Trump in the White House next week.
This is always the fear, isn't it, that this will be raised and raised in public. And, you know, we look back on what happened last Friday with President Zelensky. So are you saying that what you're hearing is that as a result of that phone call and the fact that the trade surplus was raised, that that makes it more likely that that's going to be brought up in front of the world's press when Micheál Martin is there in the Oval Office with Donald Trump?
I mean, there are certainly fears about that. We just don't know. And the extent to which there will be discussions between officials in advance of this meeting, prepping what will come up, is at this point kind of unknown, and kind of unknown in Dublin as well. But I suppose there's, you know, there's two avenues through which that could come up. It could be directly raised by Donald Trump himself, or by J.D. Vance if he's in the room. And we saw the role that he played in effectively stoking that row last week with Vladimir Zelensky in the Oval Office. Or it could be prompted by a question from, you know, either the Irish or American U.S. Journalists that are in the room. You know, so it's certainly something that I think Micheál Martin will be prepared for, will have to be prepared for. But the fact that it was raised so prominently in the call and in the readout of the call supplied by the State Department suggests that it's pretty much at the forefront of US thinking, I would have thought.
Yeah, with each day that goes past, as we get closer to this visit, the stakes seem to get higher, because of course he'll be the next European leader in there after Zelensky's visit. We'd Keir Starmer and Emmanuel Macron last week, but we're going to have huge international coverage of this meeting, would you expect?
I would imagine so. And, you know, I suppose it all depends on how the thing is played by the American side. I think that Micheál Martin will, you know, seek to be very much, he's not going to shirk from Ireland's EU membership or the obligations that come with that, But I think he would want to be seen not so much as an EU leader or as a representative of the EU, but rather as the leader of Ireland on a day that Irish Americans are obviously very kind of keen to display their heritage. And remember, Donald Trump is a kind of a New Yorker of a certain vintage. He will be very much aware, not just of the Irish-American vote. And, you know, there's been loads of work done on the kind of splintering of the Irish-American vote and how it is no longer the same as it might have been in the 60s and 70s and 80s. But Donald Trump is a creature of that time. And I think at least some of the analysis on the Irish side is that he will be very keen, you know, to, you know, or he will be keen to be friendly to the Irish and isn't going to provoke a row with the leader of Ireland. But mm-hmm. at this stage, that's just conjecture.
Now, Jack Chambers was on Morning Ireland this morning, and he was talking about the preparations the government is making in relation to possible tariffs being imposed on Europe by the United States. But given how open our economy is, Pat, what are the real options that Ireland has here?
Yeah, we're told there's work going on in the Department of Finance and also the ESRI in terms of scoping out what the imposition of tariffs might mean. And of course, you know, to call it tariffs, very broad brush, we've seen the coming and going of tariffs with, you know, with Mexico and Canada. And, you know, what sort of opt-outs that there might be for specific areas. I mean, the question is asked in Irish circles, does Donald Trump really want to make, you know, life-saving drugs imported from Ireland to the US much more expensive for elderly citizens, for all citizens, but for elderly voters, particularly in the US. And one difficulty, though, for the Irish side is that, in a way, this is kind of, you know, negotiation with the US authorities, and any response by the EU. And the EU has repeatedly said that it will respond if the US imposes tariffs on European imports. But that's out of Dublin's hands, because trade is an EU competency. And, you know, Ireland's interests will no doubt be taken into account by the European Commission. But Ireland is one of 27. And so, you know, there is this sense that we're not quite powerless or helpless, but any responses to the tariffs will not be decided in Dublin. It'll be decided in Brussels.
All right, Pat, thank you very much for being with us. Pat Leahy there, political editor with the Irish Times. And we'll have more on this a little bit later on. We'll have advice for an Taoiseach ahead of his visit to the Oval Office from someone who worked at the very heart of the American administration. But up next, would you pay more for your vegetables if the money went straight back to the farmer?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.